How's everybody? Yeah, good. Ah, thunderstorms are pretty cool, aren't they? They are. I woke up this morning, I walked out and the sun was up and the air was clear. You know, that clears the air. It's like in a relationship when you have a big fight, you know, and the air gets cleared, you know. It's the wonder of a thunderstorm, you know. It has a purpose in God's plan. Just like everything. You know, there's a season and a time for everything. And today we're sort of at the end of the season. The series we're doing, looking at Ecclesiastes 3. So, yeah, it's a good day. God is doing amazing things. You know, everyone watched the news and you see all the tragedies that are happening around the world, and there just seems to be so much uncertainty in the air today. You start to wonder, is there anywhere safe from terror attacks? And obviously ISIS and all those people, they want us to think that no, there's nowhere that is safe. But is there any safe investment in this world? Is there any secure job opportunity? And then, you know, you think about it, has there ever been security in this world? But you realize, I've got a couple of teenage sons who are doing exams at the moment, and one of the exams was math, and I was talking to one of my sons the other day, and he came at me with this really unusual question. And when you look at math, you know, it's really amazing, it's very logical, and it's really incredible that mankind have been able to work out mathematical patterns. You know, that math is this weird thing that 1 + 1 = 2, and it's really profound. Especially when you're a teenager and you're working this out. The question was, what if, Dad, 1 + 1 did not equal 2? And I thought, wow, I would need to talk to your math teacher. Because wherever you go in this universe, whatever language you speak, 1 + 1 will always equal 2, won't it? Does anyone want to challenge me on that one? Could be 11, maybe not. Maybe it was binary, I don't know. But when you look at math, you know, math is such an evidence that there is a created order to our world that can't happen just randomly. And that's really challenging, isn't it? When we're taught that, you know, the evolution of things and the whole idea of absolute truth. When you're confronted with it with math, we can sort of grasp the idea that there's this absolute truth in the world that is truth no matter where you are or what you do. And it's evidence that God has developed this world. There's something beyond us that has created this world. And we read in the Bible that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And out of this chaos, he created order. And in creating order, he separated things. Yeah, he put things in their place. Heaven and earth, you know, in the same universe, but they're different. There's a separation between the two. There's a distinction. Day and night, earth and sea, each one distinct and different. Each one unique. The plants and the animals all produce after their own kind. Each one is unique and distinct. See, God put everything in its place, and he declared that it was good. Light and dark, life and death, seed time and harvest, good and evil, love and hate, war and peace. That is the message of Ecclesiastes, that there is a time and a season for everything, and that God has made everything beautiful in its time. And since God has set a time for everything, there's a sense of security and purpose about the seasons in life. It's not just random things that happen. In the Asbury Bible commentary, it says it like this. It said, instead of changelessness, where everything is just fixed in place and it just stays that way, there is something better. There's a dynamic divine purpose with its beginning and its end. And in that dynamic divine purpose, every little thing God is able to use to bring about something beautiful in this life. Even darkness in God's hand can be used to accentuate the light. And here we are today, all of us, part of God's redemptive masterpiece. And you all look very beautiful. You could say that to someone next to you if you wanted to. This is part of God's plan, isn't it? That we are being made more and more like His Son, Jesus Christ. Bit by bit, our lives are being drawn into alignment with His plan for our lives. And this happens as we put Him first in everything. Like we just sang, you know, Jesus at the center. Jesus be the center of my life. Because when He's the center, then His rule, His plan for our life starts to take shape. But when you look at the world, you realize there's an order to our world that's not God's order. You know, if I went round saying that 1 + 1 = 3, if I did that in an exam, I would be wrong, wouldn't I? Is that right, Vic? That's right. It would be a little cross, not a tick. Yeah, I'd be denying the divine order of things, as everyone understands it. I would be believing a lie if that's what I believed. You see, God's order of things is the right way of doing things. It's right. And we see that when God sent His Son Jesus Christ into the world, you know, He came full of grace and truth to just show us God's order of things. And He was the beginning of God starting to put things right through His Son. The divine order of God being reinstated into this world through His Son Jesus Christ. And in God's order of things, love is stronger than hate. Good is greater than evil. And peace will always follow war. Which is a good, because if things were the other way around, the world would be really messed up, wouldn't it? Which I think it is. So if you've got your Bible, if you'd like to turn to Romans chapter 12, and while you're doing that, I just want to look at Ecclesiastes 3, verse 8, just to give a bit of context to where we're going. So in Ecclesiastes, the teacher says there's a time to love and a time to hate. There's a time for war and a time for peace. And the Bible has a lot to say about these two topics. And I could be here all day, but I won't. Yay, everybody says. But first, let's look at love and hate. And the Apostle Paul tells us that to be the body of Christ, in Romans 12, verse 9, he says that our love must be sincere. That we are to hate what is evil, and we are to cling on to what is good. And love is a really strong word. It's so much stronger than like, isn't it? You know, it's a good thing that they don't have strong words on Facebook. It'll be all sorts of trouble. But what love is more sincere than loving those who hate us? It doesn't get more sincere than that, does it? When there's someone who doesn't love you back and you're going to love them anyway. That's a powerful love. Hate is also a strong word, isn't it? It's more than I just don't like that. When you really hate something, there's a passion that goes with that hate. You know, we can hate our job sometimes, can't we? Has anyone else ever been in that situation? It's a strong word. But to love something is to choose it above all others. You know, it's a decision that we make. And in the same way, we can decide what we hate in life. It may not feel like it, though. We feel like that just because of circumstances that we just hate it anyway. But what we once loved can be changed. What we once hated can be changed. I used to hate mushrooms. I know. I don't love mushrooms, I must say, but I no longer hate them. They always came on pizza, and I love pizza, so I just got put up with it, and it grew on me. We can change. You know, our passions can change. We have control over them. We can often what we really are passionate about is determined by our focus in life. That is why it's so important that we cling on to the good. So look for the good in people and cling on to that. It's so easy to be focused on the negative and the hate in life. And if we're going to focus on ourselves, if we're in survival mode in life and we're just only concerned with ourselves getting by day to day, then the things that we love, the things that we hate are going to be relative to ourselves. What is good for us? A very selfish perspective on what we really love about life. And the alternative to that is that if we focus on God, and then it's all about Him. It's about what He loves and what He hates, regardless of our circumstances in life. Because while there is a choice to with our, you know, what we love and what we hate, there's a whole lot of factors that affect our focus in life. You know, all these things that try to pull our attention away from God and what is really important. Because there's factors, you know. You've got to admit that there's nothing we can do to determine the time that we are born. Is there? There's no way we can determine the family that we're born into, the country we're born in, the circumstances that we grow up in. Like, whoever feels like they had a choice to be born now? Anyone? That's my point. We have a little choice about where the war zones in this world are going to be. We can't say whether time and circumstance are going to make us refugees at some point in life, can we? We can't say with absolute certainty that's not going to happen. We have no choice over many things in life. And while we can't choose our circumstances, you know, we can always choose how we respond to them. And that is where true freedom can be found, like we were singing this morning. It's in our heart and our mind if we can't find it in the world around us. And that's where, you know, Mel Gibson really captured that so well in his movie Braveheart. Has anyone not seen Braveheart? You haven't, Julie? Okay. I've got it on DVD, you can borrow it. But for those of you who haven't seen it, there's this great speech that Braveheart, William Wallace, actually Mel Gibson, says just before the Battle of Stirling. And all his troops, all the peasants are thinking about running away because all the nobles have left them to it. And the guy, one of them says, you know, we can run and we will live. And then William Wallace replies in his good Scottish accent, "Aye, fight and you may die. Run and you'll live at least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance? Just one chance to come back here and tell your enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom." And everyone's like, "Woo!" This is so true, isn't it? Have you ever given ground to the enemy in your life? Conceded on something and you wish you could go back in time and undo that decision? You ever made a regret like that and you thought, man, if I'd been bolder, man, things would have been different. If only I'd said what I really felt. Because we never really know how many todays we're going to have. But the reality is that we've all been born for such a time as this. It's like Kate in her communion message this morning and the kid president. We have a chance at awesomeness, don't we? And I guess the question that we need to ask is, you know, what are we willing to fight for? What do we want to be awesome at? Which brings us to the next point of, you know, there's a time for war. And then there's a time for peace. Because in God's order of things, war is always followed by peace. But as a church, you know, we need to look beyond the battle of today. Because we have battles, don't we? All of us, individually, but also corporately as the church in Wauku and around the world. If we look beyond the battle of today, we can look to an eternal peace. A peace and a victory that we have through Jesus Christ. A peace that we can know and experience and live in. And that wonderful forgiveness that we have. We can enjoy it right now in our life. See, God's peace is found in a perfect unity, in a oneness that comes from having the same Spirit, having the same Lord, having a common bond of love, fighting for the same cause. And it's this wonderful picture of church that Paul describes in Romans. And he says, for us to be united together, despite all our differences, all fighting for this cause of Christ, we'll see his kingdom come. We'll see his order established in our life. And we'll start to see his peace become a reality for us. As we don't conform to the patterns of this world, but we continue to be transformed by God. In Romans 12, verse 18, he says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So everybody say, as far as it depends on me. Live at peace with everyone. Because it's not always possible, is it? There are some times really hard to love people. Especially when they do stuff you hate. But we aren't going to be judged on someone else's actions. As far as is possible for us. That is what we're judged on, how we respond. Because living at peace with people is not about people pleasing, just doing what people want when they want it and giving people, everyone, everything they want from us. That's not how real peace is achieved in our life. Has anyone ever tried to do that? Just give everyone, you know, you're demanding kids, you just give them everything they want when they want it. Wears you out. Don't try it. See, giving terrorists, not that kids are terrorists, but giving terrorists what they demand is not the answer, is it? It's never brought peace in this world. Just ask Israel. You know, they concede on things, they never have peace. That is just actually giving in to evil. You know, we should hate evil with a passion. We should stand against it. We need to be about helping, not harming. And Paul sums this up beautifully in Romans 12, verse 21. He says, don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Because that's where our war is at. Overcoming evil with good. See, God's plan for us, you know, his best for us, his awesomeness for us, involves this battle constantly in our lives to see it realized. Because it takes such faith and trust in God, in God's way of doing things, to see it happen. Even though it looks like evil is winning, even though it's the way of the world or the law says it's okay, standing up against it is a hard thing to do sometimes. But we can trust that God's way is the best way. Because even today there's conflict about what is right and what is wrong. You know, it's no longer this absolute, oh, that's not right, that's not wrong, and things are turned around, and it's like we can decide right and wrong by consensus and popular vote. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. That's what my mother taught me and my grandma. 1 + 1 still does not equal 3. You know, I was on a job once when I was cladding, and it was a big job, and it was really behind schedule before we even got there, because when you're doing cladding, you're one of the last things to happen, and there was a lot of pressure on the job before we even started. And the first day we turn up, and the foreman was very stressed. as they can be. You can tell people who are under a lot of pressure, they tend to yell a lot. And from day one, he decided we were the enemy. And maybe it's because we weren't stressed, we were pretty chilled out, relaxed, good Christian folk. And we weren't as stressed as he may have liked us to be, because it was a big job and there were only two of us. And he was expecting this massive team to turn up. But we're pretty confident about, you know, our abilities. He wasn't. And he went out of his way to make our life hell, to try and prove he was right, that we didn't have enough people, that, you know, there's too much pressure on the job, and he was always on our case. And we could have just left him to it. It was so easy. There was a temptation just to say, well, okay, we're really busy. We've got a lot of other work on. I could go and help on those other jobs. Because it wasn't our fault. And it wasn't our problem. So we could have ignored him. But no, we chose to prove him wrong. We went out of our way to help him out. It came at a cost in other jobs and had a lot of phone calls from a lot of other people. But at the end of the day, we finished ahead of time. And I know we were that good. But the foreman, who a lot of people knew as Dwayne the Pain, he became a really good friend through it all, because we chose not to give in. Anything we needed in the next stages, you know, he would sort it out for us. Put it, you know, we became priority number one for him. Even one Christmas Eve, we were in there, we were like one of the few people there, he turned up with a Santa hat and some chocolates for us. Just really awesome. And about a year later, he died of cancer. And but it was not without knowing that God loved him, that we had this relationship that we managed to build up over time. And it wouldn't have happened if we had met his fire with ours, you know, and made his stressful life even more stressful. That's the power of, you know, when we come across that kind of reaction. It's how we respond to it makes all the difference. And when it comes to overcoming evil in this world, it can create an ethical dilemma for us. You know, the Paris attacks, you know, it's got the whole world questioning the right way to respond. You know, when is the right time to turn the other cheek? And when is it the right thing to do something really loving and protect the innocent? How do you weigh those two things up? Do you just let them get away with it? You know, the various terrorist groups around our world that are threatening the world's illusion of peace right now would have been just as inspired by Mel Gibson's speech as the Scottish were. You know, their houses bombed, their families killed, their peace shattered by forces beyond their control. You know, young men with a sense of fear and powerlessness and frustration, with an anger and a hatred against the world that has done this to them, and looking at everyone else who gets to live in peace, but they don't. You know, they become overcome by evil. They give into it rather than stand against it, and they just have nowhere else to turn, so they choose. Not the best choice. But you think about them, if that was you, and you stood against ISIS and they turned up, your stand, you know, would result in you probably getting killed. It's not an easy question to answer, is it? But the church is pretty powerful. Because we have a powerful God. And he's determined that we should be on the front line when it comes to defending the weak, the least, and the lost. That we should be the ones fighting against injustice in this world. That, you know, the Mother Teresa's, the Martin Luther King's, the William Wilberforce's, you know, the same spirit that inspired them is right here today. Amen. See, the church is naturally in conflict with our world. It's almost like God just designed it that way. The early church was, from its beginning, considered a threat to the Roman Empire because it testified to one greater than any emperor in Rome. You know, Jesus Christ is Lord. when the Roman way was to say Caesar is Lord. Against this backdrop of first century Rome, we have the wonderful letters of John encouraging the church to stand up and be the church that Christ gave his life for. Because believing in Jesus came at a cost we don't often appreciate. Because it was a lot harder to do business in the early church. You know, most business deals were done in pagan temples and sealed with pagan rituals. So work was often hard to get once you signed up to the Christian faith. Neighbors didn't trust you because they thought you were part of a cult. Because they didn't, you know, Christians don't worship statues. They would gather and they'd worship this unseen God and they thought that was weird. And when things went wrong, it was the Christians' fault. Because they weren't worshipping the Roman gods. And the Roman gods were angry at them. So let's blame the Christians. God, yeah. And that's the world that God birthed his church into. The church that would triumph over the gates of hell. But our strength as a church has never been measured by our political influence. And that's changed over the years, hasn't it? But our strength is in the demonstrations of God's power to overcome evil. That's the awesomeness of his church. And against the backdrop of all this uncertainty that a lot of us are familiar with now, John writes this message to the church, telling them to hold on to the truth when there's so much pressure to leave, to just go along with the world. He says, don't lose your focus. Instead, remain united by Christ's love, by his sacrifice, by his spirit. Look to Jesus, not the world. Because our passion is going to follow our focus in life. And he says in 1 John 2:15, he says, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Dear children, this is the last hour. So for us here today, it's about us having the courage to believe. Just as it was for them. To trust that God's way is the better way. That God's order of life works. Rather than looking to the things of the world, the money, the status, the privileges, the power that the world offers, we look to Jesus for our security, our sense of value, our sense of belonging, our purpose for being here. See, believing in the goodness of God to overcome our world takes a lot of courage. But this is the last hour. It's been a pretty long hour. It's about 2,000 years. But the clock is still ticking. The time that God has set apart for judgment is coming. Praise God. We can look forward to the return of the King. Because until Jesus comes, and until he returns, until that time we will not know true peace in this world. It's always going to be insecurity. It's always going to be uncertainty. There's always going to be wars, famines, earthquakes. The world has never been a safe place. But Jesus promises us he will return, and with him will come an enduring peace for everyone, all people. Because apart from Christ, there can be no real peace. And according to John, as he tells his church, that in this world, we are to be like Jesus. If we stay focused on him, his victory will become our victory as we are transformed to be more and more like him. In 1 John 4, verse 17, he says, this is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on that day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. We are like Jesus. And the good news is the world hated Jesus. But it had no lasting power over him. his love is greater. See, Christ was no stranger to conflict. What he stood for, what he believed in, what he did brought him into conflict with all those who had authority and power over others. And much like when Braveheart rallied the troops and Jesus gathered his disciples, he gave them these words of encouragement. And these are words for us today. He says in John 16, verse 33, he says, "I've told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, have courage. I've overcome the world." Only in Jesus can we know peace. "In me," he says, "you have peace. In the world you have trouble." And following Jesus Christ is going to bring us trouble in this world. But before he conquered the grave, he conquered the world. Not through violence, but through love. I know we're entering a dangerous time as a church. We have every reason to expect greater challenges to God's plan as we step out in faith, taking a big leap of faith and buying a building, buying land. The enemy is really against the church owning the world more and more. And this whole idea of remaining in love and peace with each other is something that we need to focus on so strongly as a church. Because the enemy, I believe, in times like this, you see him send the little foxes to spoil the harvest. You know what I'm talking about? Those niggly little things, like an itch that you just can't quite scratch. You know, people, they just rub you up the wrong way for no reason and annoy you, where normally you've been really close and got on well, and suddenly these little things sort of, you know, become irritating. That is when we need to remember the words, "As far as it is possible for you, live at peace with one another." Because as a church, we are bringing God's order of things to this world. We're working out his plan through the power of his Spirit. And by putting Jesus at the center of all we do, it's going to bring us into conflict. There's going to be challenges. But he is the one that we look to. He's the one that we follow. He's the one that we hope to be more and more like. Because God doesn't do coincidence. His plan for our lives involves others. Every single person here is part of that plan. But for us to see his plan, his priority happen in our life, it's not an overnight thing. We don't just pray, "Lord, make me more like your son, Jesus Christ," and we wake up in the morning with long hair and a beard, walking around. It takes time for those things to happen. It is. It takes faith to see God's plan take shape in our life. It takes courage to not just have the good life, but to have the best life that God has for us. Because it's for such a time as this that God has called us here. In a world that is even more uncertain and insecure than it seemed yesterday, it's for such a time as this that God has put us here as his church. To bring his order of things. His order where love is always greater than hate. To focus on Jesus Christ and not the world. I'd just like to invite Berenice, if you just come up. I just want to close. You know, there's this beautiful song that I've had on my heart all week, and I just want to take some time. That whatever your situation is, whatever we're facing in life, if we can turn our eyes upon Jesus, and we look at him in the midst of the chaos, in the midst of the uncertainty, we look at Jesus Christ, you'll suddenly realize that all these things in the world will start to fade away. All the worries that we have, all the uncertainty in life, grow strangely dim in the light of His glory, His love for us. And there's this wonderful lady, Lilias Trotter, who wrote a song, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus, in 1918. And she said this. She said, never has it been so easy to live in half a dozen harmless worlds at once. Art, music, social science, games, motoring, the following of some profession, and so on. And between them, we run the risk of drifting about, the good hiding the best. It's easy to find out whether our lives are focused, and if so, where the focus lies. Where do our thoughts settle when consciousness comes back in the morning? Where do they swing back to when the pressure is off during the day? Dare to have it out with God. Ask him to show you whether or not all is focused on Christ and His glory. Turn your soul's vision to Jesus. Look and look and look at Him. And a strange dimness will come over all that is apart from Him. You know, demands and desires of this world can seem really overwhelming. I thought it'd be good for us as a church at this time and this season to just pause and allow God to recalibrate our hearts today. And so I've invited Berenice to come and sing that song for us. As we just, if you just close your eyes and just allow your heart to focus on Jesus.